To begin, let's go back to January 1st, 1965, Willis Conover's 10th anniversary on The Voice of America. In an interesting role reversal, Willis was interviewed by the great jazz saxophonist and pianist Jerry Mulligan. Let's listen to what happened when Jerry Mulligan turned the tables on Willis Conover.
This is probably as interesting a switch in roles as for you as it is for me.
Yeah.
For you to be the interviewee and for me to be the interviewer. So, it would seem to me the logical place to start would be, where were you born?
Buffalo, New York, in Upper New York State, December 18th, 1920. Now I've given that away.
You see, I wasn't going to ask when. And you went to school there?
My father was an army officer, and we moved quite a bit. And so the Buffalo schools were among those I attended. I went to about 30 different schools before I was through.
Well, that sounds familiar.
Something like being on the road.
Well, I have almost as many hometowns as you do, probably. Then when you were in school, is that when you first became interested in radio?
In one of the high schools I attended, up around Buffalo, New York, an upperclassman wrote a skit about that presumably took place in a radio station, and I was given the part of the radio announcer, and I read my little bit, and afterwards people said, "You sounded just like a real radio announcer." And I said, "Oh," because at the age of 14 you're not too sure where you've been, let alone where you're going, and this was an indication of where I might want to go professionally, or at least where I wanted to go after I left home. And then a couple of years later I took part in a spelling contest for three states down on the eastern shore of Maryland and wound up in the finals, which were broadcast on a Wilmington, Delaware radio station. And I came out in the last three, and the announcer for the program came out of the control room and said, the engineer was saying, "Boy, listen to this fellow talk, and if you ever want a job in radio, come to us." It happened that I came back to him when I wanted a job in radio, and he didn't remember me. But at least he decided for me that that was what I was going to try to do.
He supplied a bit of impetus.
Yeah.
Well, now let's see. There are two interests that we're interested in getting to, and we know how you got into radio. How about your interest in music, specifically jazz?
My father's sister was an excellent choir singer, and insisted that while my voice was still unchanged, I sing in choirs and learn the rudiments of music reading and to some extent singing. And so that was the only training I had in music. After that, working in radio, I found in putting records together to make programs that certain records sounded more interesting to me than others. They had more vitality, more excitement, more, I don't know what it was. And I played those more and more often. And after a while, a fellow in a nearby record store, a clerk who was also a musician, said, "Since you like these records so much, why don't you get this magazine and find out what it is you're playing?" And the magazine was Downbeat. And I found that what I was playing was called jazz. It just happened that way. Of course, Downbeat and other publications and other founts of information and guidance, whether they're published or spoken, can only indicate a direction for your understanding and your taste to go, and it's very useful at the beginning. After you learn what the consensus is on the music you like, if you're anybody at all, you begin to break away from what other people think and feel and develop your own feelings about it, still retaining what you have felt from what they told you should feel originally. I'm speaking for myself now, of course, Jerry.
Well, I was going to say that you, I suppose you were becoming interested in jazz and the bands about the same time that I was, and there were a number of bands during those days that were very interesting from a musical standpoint, as well as being able to achieved some popularity.
Well, Jerry, may I ask you this? Is it possible to say that your first favorite, judging by your interest in composition and a lot of other things, that your first favorite might have been Duke Ellington?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Well, it's an interesting parallel because my first favorite became my first favorite before I ever heard Duke Ellington, and that was Charlie Barnett, who played like Duke Ellington.
Yeah.
And Ellington
Charlie's band went through a period where they did everything as much like Duke as possible.
In fact, at one time, I recall when the Barnett Band's library was burned in a nightclub fire, Duke said, come around and take all the arrangements you want and play them yourself until you get your own library built up again.
Hmm.
And that really helped cap it.
Yeah. Well, now let's see. When I first met you, you were, I think it was before you were actually on the Voice.
That's right.
You were at a station in Washington, D.C. By what stages came you thither?
Well, let's see, this was about, this was the very early 50s or late 40s, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not entirely in love with the requirements of commercial domestic broadcasting.
With your taste in music, I can well understand that.
And so I tried to balance my programming activities with what they wanted part of the time, but also at my insistence, some time to play what I wanted the way I wanted to. This still caused an argument with the station manager at least once a week. So when I heard that the Voice of America was deciding to do a jazz program, I called, or as a matter of fact, I asked a friend in the State Department, whom I knew only as a friend, but I recall that he was also in the State Department. I thought that a call from him might get in on a slightly higher level over there, and he called, and fortunately, he reached the one person in authority at the Voice of America who knew and liked jazz, and that was John Wiggum. And John invited me over, and we talked, and we both knew immediately that we both knew about the music. And from there, I won't say that the sailing was smooth, but it wasn't as difficult as it had been in commercial radio. You yourself would probably have a much easier life if you could live with yourself, if you were willing to play music that was less rich musically.
Well, I wonder sometimes if some of us really have any choice in it.
That's true. You do what you have to do.
Yes, that has nothing to do with really choice, you know. If I were to play this way or that way, I really can't do it. I don't know how. And I know this to be true of you, that you must play the things you like. If you were stuck playing records night after night of things you hate, you couldn't live with yourself.
Well, in doing a program, that's quite true, and I'm just amplifying what you said. In doing a program, there comes a spot after you have done several different recordings. A program is like a symphony. A composer will take notes and put them together. All I can do as a non-musician is to take records and put them in a sequence that builds a structure that reflects and stimulates my feelings. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I'm in a position to do it so that other people can share it with me. But there comes a time in such a program when only a certain performer doing a certain kind of performance is the right performer and performance to follow the record that preceded and to precede the record that follows. And at this point, I'm simply not going to go to the top 40 list.
Well, I can see that that the opportunity to do The Voice offered you really a unique outlet for your taste in music.
It's the only completely happy job I've ever had, Jerry.
Wonderful.
They have they've not only left me alone, as they promised, assured me that they trusted my taste and experience and ability, but they've supported me by keeping other people from jumping on me or from interfering with what I did, and have given me two excellent assistants, a girl to run my office and a guy to run the equipment in the control room. And I had my choice of people, and I couldn't have done better.
You know, there's an irony in here somewhere that it might be interesting for the people all over the world who hear your program to realize that I think a good many of the musicians here are agreed that your program and your sense of programming and the way you handle it makes for probably the best possible recorded music program on radio, and it's a program that we can't get in this country. Maybe we could do something like to talk the voice into beaming into America. Might be good for all of us.
Actually, there is a law against a government-supported radio station in America broadcasting in mm-hmm. competition with
the commercial stations.
With commercial stations, which makes sense. Nevertheless, with a shortwave receiver, you can hear it in America, too. What I would like to do, inasmuch as my programming and presentation are necessarily different for a domestic program from my approach to doing a program that will be heard everywhere else in the world, I would like to take the essence of the Voice of America program and reshape it for domestic audiences, as I have done from time to time, and if I ever find time, we'll try to do again.
And now you're ready to start another 10 years with The Voice?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. In fact, it's just begun.
At this point, Willis, I would like to say to everyone that for myself and for your many friends among the musicians, that we would like to congratulate you on your 10th anniversary and to let you know how we feel about the program that you do. The program has been of tremendous importance to jazz and the jazz musicians all over the world. The number of people in the countries I've been to and the people who come to this country who were introduced to jazz by your program is really tremendous. So your contribution to jazz is really incalculable, and all of us would like to thank you for that.
Thank you, Jack.
And as well, the quality that you bring to the program, it has put the whole thing on a level that is one that is a kind of combination that you could wish for. It seldom happens that the person that has the opportunity to do a program such as you're doing should have the taste to do it in a way that introduces it to people and presents it to people in the best possible way. And I think that people who have heard your program over a long period of time have had the opportunity to develop their own musical taste in a way that they get the most out of the jazz experience. And we'd like to thank you for that also. And I'd like to say to all the listeners of the program that Mr. Conover is a very popular man here in New York among the musicians, and that we all wish him and his program well for many years to come.
Willis Conover being interviewed by his friend and jazz man Jerry Mulligan on January 1st, 1965, Willis Conover's 10th anniversary on VOA.